This is Daniel Thacker. I'm sitting here with Calvin Brown, fisherman, Rivera, Texas. Your official address is Lola Beach or is it Riviera?
It's Rivera. Yeah.
And I'm also sitting with Karen Meadows. She's the one that brokered the interview and has known Calvin for a number of years. Mm-hmm. So if she asks questions, that's what she's here for, because she knows Calvin well. And we're going. Calvin is a commercial fisherman here, and he's been here his entire life. And we're going to get some of his life story. So, Calvin, when were you born?
12/17/52.
1952. That means you're 65 now?
65.
Okay. And Karen was telling me that the story kind of goes before you were born. Your dad was an influential man in this area?
Well, Dad was. He was a cook at the King's Inn for 45 years.
He's part of what made King's Inn famous, because your dad
invented. Yeah, he invented some of the recipes that they got, you know, so like the tartar sauce, which they use, you know, kind of everybody worldwide knows about it.
It's famous. No, yeah. I've had it. Yeah. It lives up to its reputation. That was your dad, huh?
Uh-huh.
My goodness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, Karen said that founded this place?
His grandfather.
No, his grandfather. Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. So your grandfather.
Yeah, Grandpa bought this in 1934, I think. About 40 acres. They call Loyola Beach.
Well, what? Tell him why. Why do they call it Loyola Beach?
That was his grandpa's name. I might be wrong on that.
You're right.
I'm right. I remember my mom saying that.
Uh-huh.
What was your grandfather's name?
Ignatius Loyola. Was his name.
Underbrink. It's a UND. I think it probably was Unter to begin with, but they changed it.
Because of, you know, the Germans, all the Germans, they were looking for them back in that time. So
sure.
Instead of Unter, they changed it to Under.
Uh-huh. So it didn't sound so German during World War II.
Yeah.
You didn't want to be a German during World War II.
Now, why did he decide to buy 40 acres here? Was there a reason?
He wanted to build a beach. That's what he wanted. And he built the King's Inn. You know, the King's Inn. I was the first one to open it, you know.
Didn't he call it a hamburger?
Yeah, it was a hamburger at the very beginning. Yeah, here's some pictures of it. And when it was first,
right now, Calvin's showing us pictures, and we will scan these and put it with his collection, so you'll be able to see these pictures.
That's when it first.
Was it called Orlando's Hideaway? Was that what it was called?
No, it was King's Inn.
Okay.
It was King's Inn.
Okay. And he had little beach houses, because there used to be more of a beach there than there is now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess this may be real original.
And so this was always called Baffin Bay since we've been known.
Baffin Bay.
Okay. And Baffin Bay, for fishing, it's world renowned or?
Yeah, world renowned for its trout mainly, because it has a real big, you know, sports wise, you know, it's world renowned for its big trout.
How big does a trout get?
I think the state record is here. Oh boy. It's about, I'm not 100% sure that it's around 31 inches and 13 point something pounds. It's a state record, and it was caught in Baffin. Now, that might not be exact right on the pound, but the state record, unless it's been broke here recently somewhere else.
Sure.
Baffin holds a state record on a spotted trout.
Baffin has a very small connection to the Gulf. It is connected to the Gulf, but it has a fairly small opening into the Gulf.
We can always pause it if you need. We can always pause it if you need to.
That's Charlie wanting some fish, but he can wait.
It's a small opening that goes into the gulf.
Right. That's at one time this bay was either the first or the second saltiest body of water in the.
We can pause it if you need to. Okay. That's all right.
If they do, they do.
Yeah. So, was there a reason why Ignatius picked this place, or was it just luck, or was there a plan, or?
You know, I don't really know why he picked it. He moved down here and lived, you know, about 5 miles up the road, past Botman, and had a farm there for, I guess, 20 years before he bought this place. 15 or 20, because mine was 15 or 20. 15 or 16 when she was still on the farm. So, but I guess he was farmed all that time, and then he just wanted to build a beach, you know, and name it after his grandpa or his dad.
I think the original story of the whole area of Rivera was that the Coke came down, Coke. Right? Mm-hmm. And what he told, he was looking for German immigrants from up north. So what he told the Catholic Church was that if you encourage your people to move this direction, I will build you a church. And that's what the Botman community mm-hmm. and the Botman Church is. So your grandfather may have come as one of those people.
He probably was with that bunch that built Botman, mm-hmm. you know, because mm-hmm. they built that church.
And I think he was just a ahead of his time entrepreneur because he built little fishing houses, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he built a beach with little cabins where you could, little rooms where you could change. That's your mom was telling me.
Yeah, he had that right down on. Well, the hurricane knocked all that out. It was a beach house right in front of the King's Inn where you had a pier there and you could go swimming, and the beach was a lot further out now. The hurricanes have knocked it down, but. You know, you could go swimming and fishing and then come up, take a shower and clean up. It was like that when it was first built. And then, too, they had a, right beside it, this side, they built a fish house. He sold it to another guy, a piece of land, and he built a fish house. I guess that was probably one of the first fish houses here.
Well, what is a fish house?
Just a place that buys fish.
Okay.
What we call a fish house.
It's like a market.
A market, yeah, okay. Fish market. Yeah.
Okay.
And, but then they used to go out and stay 4, 5, 6 days on and bring bar ice, you know, put trout lines out, catch them and ice them, then come in and they'd sell them to that market there. And then where they shipped them was, I guess, all over San Antonio and Houston.
So people would come in from all over to the fish house to get their fish then?
Well, no, I don't really think they'd come. They'd have to haul them to them.
Yeah, okay.
The guy that had the fish house, he'd probably, when that was built, I don't know, put them on a train, I guess, because they mostly wagons back then.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of them shrimp was trained, and some of them on ice. I guess they didn't have to, couldn't go too far with ice, you know. Houston, San Antonio, maybe.
When was the city, or when was Loyola founded? Roughly.
I'd say 1934 is when Grandpa named it. 34 or 35. If Mom was here, she could have told you that.
Well, I know that Orlando moved into the house that I live in 1948. Your mom has told me that. She was, it was 1948 and she was 16.
Okay.
When they moved into that house.
I thought she was 15 or 16 when they moved off the farm.
Mm-hmm. She was. And she said he retired in my house. That's where he retired. And mm-hmm. where my little office is was a porch. And he would sit out and watch his fishing cabins because they were still very active, and the beach. By then he had sold the restaurant to a lady. And, but he would sit there and, you know, watch his little fishing cabins and watch the.
And he was still selling off little pieces of that land too mm-hmm. at that time. You sell 100 foot, 50 foot, 200 foot acre, whatever. Yeah. People.
He was, He was just an entrepreneur. He was very foresighted as to what this area could become.
So the King's Inn actually wasn't owned by the King Ranch then, right?
No, okay. It was never owned by the King Ranch.
Okay, we just called it the King's
Inn.
Okay.
It was named that. I don't know what the reason that was. Yeah, or where that come from, but.
Well, I know just, of course, I'm a transplant to Texas, but anytime I tell them I'm from Kingsville, they always talk about the King's Inn. We need to come down so we can have to go to the King's Inn.
People come from all over. They used to fly, and it hadn't been that long ago that they fly helicopters from some of the ranches. You know, the small ranch helicopters will land in the parking lot and go in and eat.
No kidding.
Yeah, it still happens. Uh-huh. You know, not as much as it used to. It used to happen more, but they still do that. Yeah, from all of these ranches around here, they'll fly in and have lunch and then fly out. So it's kind of world renowned. And his grandfather started it with the octagonal building. That was the very first one. It's on the end.
There was a dance floor in there too. They had dances every weekend.
Sold hamburgers and had dances, right?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And you could go to the beach. So you could come down here and spend your entire day. You could fish, you could go to the beach, you could eat your hamburger, and you could stay in the evening to dance. I think he was just a man who had a lot of foresight about what he could do, you know, and what this place could look like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
How many kinds of fish are out there?
I don't know how many different. Oh, there's probably a bunch, but the main ones are trout, drum, redfish, sheephead, flounder, croaker.
Lots of hard heads.
Oh, yeah. Catfish or hard head, whatever you want to call
them. And mullets.
Yeah, a lot of mullet, a lot of crabs.
Now, your father, when he, how did he kind of carry on the family business or stay in?
Well, no, that was sold to a mom. Grandpa sold it to Mom Wright, a lady named Mom Wright. And Mom Wright give it or willed it to Cotton Ware, and then that's when Daddy started working for it when Mr. Ware had it.
The connection with Loyola Beach is not his father, it's his mother.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, he's a Brown.
Okay.
His father was a Brown. Sure. His mother was an Underbrink.
Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah. And Calvin's got some pretty wild stories about growing up down here as a little boy.
Oh, yeah. We used to do all kinds of things.
So, you grew up around the water. You grew up fishing. Like, what was your earliest memories as far as fishing?
I guess I was probably 12, 13. We put trout lines sometimes right here. Of course, this ain't the same people. Like, this house wasn't here then. This was just beach mostly, not many houses back then. And we just put trout lines off here, bait them up, catch fish, and bring them to the fish market and sell them.
What is a trout line?
Well, trout line is, well, you could have it any length. Now it's legal, a 600-foot line with 100-foot hooks, 100 hooks on it. And you bait each hook.
And you put floaters, so you know where it is.
Yeah, put floats on some of them, some bottom lines, don't float the one in. And
you mark them so that you know where yours are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mark the ends. You got to have a name and address on the end float so you know who's whose.
Doesn't keep you from taking fish off of somebody else's,
does it? There's a few of them like that. not too many people's. Well, some of the sports will stop and run some more than a commercial stop and run somebody up.
Yeah.
The sports will stop, take them a few fish, and then take off, you know, nowadays.
What I find interesting is that it took me a long time to realize what they were talking about. You know, I worked at the store, and it took me a long time. They would say, oh, I'm fishing with dials. And what are dials?
I think there's one laying here somewhere. I thought Jason was showing me a. This we started about 15, 20 years ago. That's all that is, a piece of dowel rod with a hole drilled in it, and you saw it off. And them drum, mainly drum, bite it. 99% drum. A redfish every once in a while.
And that's a dial, right?
That's what they call it. We call it fishing with wood or dialing
for dollars. Yeah, because basically it's just a little chunk of wood.
All it is, a chunk of wood.
So then you don't spend money on bait.
And the drum will it'll go after this.
Because it moves, I suppose.
Yeah, most people think it's a little bitty crab. The lots of them out here. And we got floats on them lines. And that float bobs that hook up and down. And they think it's a little crab swimming. And they run up and bite at it.
So you started selling fish when you were 12, right?
12, 13, probably. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you always know that you wanted to get into the fishing business, or did you ever have any kind of aspirations for anything else, or once you got a taste of the water, you just stayed there?
I guess I just stayed there. I did a lot of different things instead of just fishing. You know, we shrimp, snapper fish, crabs, oysters. Mainly that's it. You know, a lot of shrimping, a lot of fishing, and I snapper fished for 10 years, 9 or 10 years. That was a pretty wild deal. Most of it was done off of Mexico, which was illegal.
What was that exactly?
Snapper fishing?
Yeah.
Well, you go offshore in the Gulf.
Okay.
Down there we stayed 30, 40 fathoms, which about a mile to the fathom, we'd be 30, 40 miles offshore. But we go down there and snapper fish, you know, bandit lines. And
now, why was it a bandit line?
That's what we call the bandit line. It's just a line you drop off the side. They got electric motors. They had 50 hooks on each line, but the hooks wasn't but about that 4 inches apart. And you drop it down on the snapper on the reefs. Just leave it there a minute. And you have one on each side. Just walk back and forth. You'd be pulling up lots of snapper, you know. And ice them down. We'd stay about 5, 6, 7 days at a time.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And that was against the law?
It was to snapper in Mexico.
Oh, okay.
In Mexican waters. So.
Okay.
But snapper fishing, when I started in about 90, somewhere in there. They caught it down real bad. They had lots of snapper boats at that time. But you could go down there, and there wasn't hardly nobody to go because, well, that gunboat, he'd either kill you or catch you and bring you into, you know, the
Mexican federal
Mexican jail. You'd have to stay there for 15 days, $10,000 fine. And when you got out, you were lucky if you had a steering wheel on your boat. To come home with no fuel, no rigging, just barely. They would never take the motor. I never heard of them taking the motor. But you had to wait. You had to. And then if you didn't stop right away, they always had that 50 caliber machine gun. They'd fire across you, rigging first, you know, which would stop most people. But some wouldn't. They'd come down lower until they started shooting in the hull, you know. We seen one boat, we come in. We heard him chasing it down there, and he never would stop. The other two did, but he didn't. And he come all the way across the line. It was about 35, 40 miles in. And they all put it on autopilot, went down and got by the motor. They was in a big Gulf boat. And that boat had 300 some odd holes in it, 50 caliber. It'd go right through that winch, through the mast, through everything. But it never hit his autopilot, or it never hit a line to go to his fuel or something to stop him anyway.
Right.
And they made it across. But they said they're never going back. We talked to them, you know, about a week later. The guy said, we ain't never going back down there.
How long did you fish down there like that?
About 9 years.
No kidding.
Yeah. They come up right on us once or twice. But at night. And there wasn't much sense running from First we went down there, they had an old gunboat called Smokey. We called it Smokey Joe. You could see it coming for 20 miles from the smoke. It looked like one of them old train, locomotive trains.
Yeah.
And it run about 8 knots. So you could stay way ahead of the smoke, you know, outrun it. And we never worried about him because he never come that far offshore. He was trying to catch somebody inshore, stripping. And we had snapper fishing offshore. But later they got a British escort carrier. It was the escort that escorts the carrier. It was 380 foot long. It run about 28 knots. Now that would come up on you quick, you know.
Right.
And, but he stayed inshore most of the time too, but he did come out there where we was. They were mainly trying to catch shrimp boats.
Why is that?
They were these big Gulf boats that go dragging up from the United States.
Yeah.
And go down there and drag, catch Mexican shrimp, you know, because it was thicker because they didn't have no boats. But they would come offshore, you know, and get the snapper boats too. I know a couple that got caught that snappered, you know. That's how I knew what happened.
Yeah.
To them, you know, because they stayed 15 days in jail, $10,000 fine, you know, nothing left on the boat.
But it must have been worth it to take that kind of risk.
Yeah, we was catching a lot of snapper. Ooh, a lot of snapper. You know, we generally get 4,000 to 6,000 pounds of snapper, you know, in 4 or 5 to 6 days. Generally we stay 4 or 5, sometimes 6. You know, and snapper we're bringing about 275, 3 1/4 pound.
So, wow.
You know, that was a pretty good catch.
That was a pretty good catch,
yeah.
For a week's worth of work.
Uh-huh.
Did you work around the clock, or how did that work?
Well, you get too tired. We like to sometimes, but,
yeah,
you know, he had to sleep some, so we just anchor up at night, you know.
Was Valentine with you during all those
years? He went, I can't remember if we took him into Mexico, though. We snappered back this way. It was towards the end of snap when I quit snapping. It got to where you couldn't go to Mexico because then you had to have a permit to unload your fish, and it got to where you just couldn't do it. And that's when Valentino was with me. Dwight Barker was the guy that was generally with me when he was down there. I think I took Valentino's snapper from here to Galveston in that area.
Yeah.
But there wasn't nobody go with you snapper down there.
It's dangerous.
Oh, yeah. You got to tell a guy that's going with you if we get caught or going to jail, and you might get shot at and all that. So you couldn't get too many people to go with you.
How did you first decide to go? Or
there's an old man down there. His name was Roy Wagner. Now, you talk about it. He couldn't read. He couldn't write. He couldn't do nothing. But he could snapper fish. And before then, the 40s and 50s, you could get a permit to go fishing and stuff. And then they took all the permits away about 1980, something like that. So, but that old man fished down there for years while it was legal. And, of course, we was over here snapper, and he said, man, that ain't working there. Let's go down there. He said, you know, but he's crazier than me, I think, you know, because we'd get cut close to that damn gunboat, you know, it worried me. It didn't worry him too much. But that's how I got started with an old snapper fisherman that fished it when it was legal to have a permit. That's how we knew where the rocks were, the reefs, everything there was to fish because of that guy. But we'd go off mainly between Tampico and Washington Beach. We went between the Yucatan and Tampico a couple times. It takes about 40 hours of running to get there.
No kidding.
Out of Fort Isabel.
No kidding.
Yeah.
How old were you? How old were you at that time?
Well, how old would I have been in about 1990? Or 60, how long? Have to get a calculator out.
I know. We've gotten that old.
I'm probably 40.
Yeah, 37.
40.
Yeah, around
there. Around that area when I started. Because I remember I was 40-something about when I quit.
But you had a house and a wife and...
Yeah.
And 4 kids at the time.
And the main reason we went snapping, we had a freeze in 80, three or four, and they got where you just couldn't catch a drum here. They right. froze them and killed them. You know, it takes about 5 or 6, 7 years for the drum to come back after a hard freeze. We hadn't had a hard freeze in a long time. We're really fast due, you know. Mm-hmm. But when it does happen, you can't make a living catching drum here after a real hard freeze. And I think the last hard one we had was 88, 89, yes. somewhere in there. It wasn't as hard as the one at 81. But
how cold did it get?
I don't know. It was ice out past the piers here.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And for salt water to freeze.
I've seen them pictures. I should have got them. I had a couple of skiffs in the water. The valve dipped down. And they're not here. They was in another book. I could find them. They froze in. The boats were froze in. You couldn't move them or nothing.
My goodness.
Takes a lot for salt water to
freeze. It does. That was a real softy back then, too. It was really cold.
So one of the reasons the drum like it here is it's saltier, right?
It's a saltier bay. They like that salt content. Mm-hmm. Drum do.
And their favorite food used to be here quite a bit, mm-hmm. right?
What was that?
Well, the coquinas. They like eating these coquinas. And well, we've had something kill them off 4, 5, 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's taken about 6 years for them just to start coming back. Everybody quit fishing here, as a matter of fact, and went to Fort Mansfield and fished for 4 or 5 years. And now the coquinas are coming back, drum are coming back good, pretty good. But pollution's what got them.
The coquinas?
The coquinas, yeah.
It also killed all the barnacles on the
pier. Yeah, it even killed the barnacles on the pier. That's how bad it was.
And what do you think that pollution came from?
Farms, Zelenies, oh, a little bit from everything. Yeah. There,
a lot of rivers feed in to Baffa Bay.
Right.
And so the wash down from the fields.
Well, the creeks. We don't have a river.
Oh, creeks.
Okay. Yeah, creeks. And everything that gets put on, eventually if a big rain comes, washes it and comes in here.
Because Steve would talk about how they spray the cotton. It's some real nasty stuff. Mm-hmm.
It used to be worse. They used to use arsenic acid. And that's what got the white shrimp in this bay, was the arsenic acid, is what I think. But between the combination of farming and oil fields.
And no rain.
No rain. It got saltier, too. It was a combination of 3 or 4 things, you know. Finally got it where it killed all the coquinas. I couldn't believe it, but it killed the barnacles too. I ain't seen nothing kill a barnacle before.
And a barnacle, what is a barnacle?
They grow on every post and stick out there.
It's underwater.
It's underwater.
Uh-huh. It's what grows like if you see a whale, they grow on whales and stuff.
But if you just walk out there to the pier, right under the water level, you'll see, and they're sharp.
Yeah.
If you drag your leg across them, they'll cut you.
And they're alive.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
They eat.
Yeah, they're alive.
Uh-huh. Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. They killed those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can kill those.
Yeah, and they're pretty tough.
I never, as long as I've lived here, ever seen a barnacle get killed.
Right.
Until that happened.
Right. But we went quite a few years in a drought period where we didn't have any rain to kind of, you know.
Got saltier, too.
Yeah. At one point, what was the salt content in this bay?
About 68 mm-hmm. or 69.
That's a lot.
Parts per million. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't be over around 30, you know, mm-hmm. about right.
And we don't have enough inflow from the Gulf.
No, not here.
Unless we have a big hurricane or something, and then it kind of washes it out and sucks it out and refills it with better water.
It'll flush it out. That's what we need, a good flushing. But I hate to get hurt.
Yeah, can it just flush without the hurricane part? Yeah.
So what do you think the future of fishing in here is?
Well, if they can stop the pollution, it'll be all right, I think. Of course, as soon as what I think will end up happening myself is that we'll have another fish kill, freeze, or maybe pollution, and then they'll stop the drum fishing commercially, and then probably never let them have it back.
Right now, you can't get a license.
That's what will probably happen in the future sometime.
they are not issuing any more commercial fishing licenses in the state of Texas. And state of Texas, is that right?
No, just the people that have them.
Yeah.
And a lot of times if it gets bad, some people sell them, you know. You can sell them back to the state, and then they never come back. You can sell them to the individual, and they'll keep fishing with them. But a lot of them sold them back to the state. They're probably not about 25% of the commercial fishermen left that, say, was in the 90s, you know.
And you don't see a lot of the younger people. There's some older guys still fishing, and a few young.
Cause yeah, a few young, but not many.
Your son fishes. One of his sons fishes, really. But most of them are the older guys that have kind of are getting older and not going to fish much longer.
Now, why would they take, why would they focus on taking away commercial license? That's really not the problem, is it?
No, but we're the easiest to work with because we can't fight, you know, no way to stop them. Like GCCA, if they was to say you couldn't catch the trout or stop the sports fishing, well, they got a big bunch of lobbyist groups up there in Austin. And
tell him what GCCA is.
That's a Gulf Coast, one of them, Gulf Coast Conservation. GCCA is, that's what it is, Gulf Coast Conservation Act. But it's run by mostly doctors and lawyers.
Sports fishermen,
people with a lot of money. And they, you know, like I say, that's what it takes in Austin to get the bills passed, what you want.
That, and they're learning how to farm a lot of things, like shrimp.
Oh, yeah.
The sport fishermen are?
No. They're actually learning how to farm a lot of fish. So
they farm redfish now. We can't catch and sell a redfish no more.
No kidding, because they have their farms.
No. They classified trout and red as a sports fish, but they didn't drum. It was just nobody wanted to catch it. Sports, sure. So, and then they made a law where you couldn't catch any sports fish commercially.
Wow, they really handcuff you, don't they?
Yeah, so the only fish we can take out of that bay. Well, we can take a drum, a flounder, or a sheephead. That's all we can legally take out. If we catch a redfish or a trout, we got to turn it loose.
No kidding. Mm-hmm.
And they used to have better luck in catching fish because they used to use what they call the gill
net. Oh, yeah. We did lots of gill netting back in the day.
Well, what is a gill net?
It's a piece of webbing. You just stretch it up, put a lot of corks and leads on it. The fish just swim into it and get tangled up. Make different size mashes, catch different size fish for drum, mainly. A travel net, now it'll catch trout and red and everything. We use what we call gill nets.
How long would they be?
Most of those were 300 foot long, but you could put, we'd put 6-8 out, sometimes 5-6-8. Have a lot of net out.
Yeah.
Catch lots of fish.
Yeah, and it all had to be done at night, too.
See? Because?
Well, the game wasn't getting
seen. Yeah.
I told you, Calvin was an outlaw fisherman.
We'd run for them game words all the time. But they wouldn't shoot you. I like the gunboat. We had one game word shot at us. I still think he shot in the air. Because I know that game word is a good shot. He didn't even hit my boat. You know, so I think he shot in the air. But he says he wouldn't, but I don't know. But most of the time, they just want to stop, catch you, take your fish, get your gill nets, find you. Next night, they do the same thing if they could.
Now, gill nets were legal?
Oh, yeah, they were illegal.
No, they were legal for a while, or they were
always
illegal?
They were not in any of my time. They made them outlawed probably in the 40s.
Okay.
You know, they were always outlawed since I was born.
Okay.
They were illegal. In Baffin Bay. Now, at Carpus Bay and some other bays, you could use them legal. Port Isabel, you could use them legal.
Why was it illegal here?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't really know why they made this bay illegal. They made parts of other bays illegal. Well, I think what it was, I heard him say, this is what they call a minor bay.
Okay.
And Corpus Christi Bay, Matagorda Bay, parts of Port Isabel Bay are called major bays. So And like, you couldn't put a gillnet in, say, Copano, or you couldn't put a gillnet in New Hastings Bay, but you could put one in Corpus Christi Bay. Okay. And that's the reason it was a minor bay, what they call it. And Baffin Bay is a minor bay.
Just because it was a bigger bay and would have more fish. Right,
probably. So, okay. Mm-hmm. That was their thinking.
So when did you decide to start fishing full time, or when did you start working for yourself?
Probably when I was 17.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I started deckhanding on a shrimp boat for Carol West. And then about 2 years later, I got my own shrimp boat, started shrimping. We shrimp. Back then, you could make good money shrimping. So you'd shrimp in, say, from May, June, July, August, September, and October. And then November, December, January, February, so then we fish. It was about half and half is what it was. You could make a lot better money shrimping at that time of the year than you could fishing. We didn't know about these dials, or we might have done that back then. But if you put, like, back then, the only thing you could put on them that we knew of was crab or cut mullet, or, and there's so many catfish, you just can't catch nothing in the summertime. So we'd go shrimping, and you could do good shrimping. Generally, you know, till December. And then by then it's getting cold. And you come back here and go fishing.
But you can't shrimp anymore?
Yeah, you can. Well, that's another story. When they brought the Vietnamese in, they about wiped them out.
No kidding.
The shrimp, yeah.
How's that? They overfished it? Or?
Oh, yeah, way overfished it. There wasn't hardly, well, say in Fulton and Rockport, but that's where I shrimped a lot. There might have been 20 of us shrimping up there, 25. And then when they all, I don't know what year that was, it ended that Vietnam War.
75?
75, something like that. They brought all those Vietnamese back, you know. And those guys liked fishing and shrimping. So I don't know exactly how they got all their money, but they had just hundreds of them built shrimp boats. And they started shrimping. Well, you get hundreds of them out there dragging, they just depleted it.
Right.
And that's what happened to the shrimp. That's when I kind of quit, come back down here. Didn't go back up there much. And they didn't have to abide by our laws much. Game Warden never messed with them Vietnamese.
No kidding.
And they was told hands off, I was told, by a couple of different game wardens. I won't say who they are. But, I mean, they give us a ticket for not having half our shrimp alive in them. Vietnamese, they have a big net, not a live box. And all the shrimp dead and way over the limit. We'd do nothing to them. Huh. We did something, a little bitty something wrong with the game word. Get you, you know, give you a ticket, take your shrimp. But later on, they started, you know, policing the Vietnamese. But it was too late. There was too many of them.
So what did you, how did you adjust to the shrimp being gone?
Well, that was probably when the shrimping pretty much quit, and it just happened to be a freeze, too. That's when I snapped for 10 years.
Okay.
I quit shrimping and didn't hardly do no fishing because there wasn't no fish. So I went snapper fishing for about 10 years. And by then, shrimp had come back a lot. They made a law where you had a limited entry on shrimp boats about that time. A lot of the Vietnamese quit. You still can't make a living up there catching dead shrimp. Only thing is, you can catch live shrimp now.
Dead shrimp? Like?
Yeah, just sell shrimp just strictly by the pound.
Oh, okay.
Dead and not alive. The only thing if people make any money at shrimping now in the bays is supplying shrimp for a bait stand.
No kidding.
Live shrimp and dead shrimp for, you know, dead for putting on a hook.
Okay.
But there's not hardly any of them that just commercial. We call it meat dragging, you know, just dragging for shrimp to sell dead. And another reason that is because the shrimp farms. Price of shrimp is cheaper right now than what it was back in the 80s.
Huh. Because of the shrimp
farms. Pond raised and imports on the shrimp. You could, well, back in the 80s something, I'd get $2.20 a pound for 40, 50 at a certain time. You can't 90 cents for a 40, 50 right now.
40-50 is the mix according to the size. How many shrimp in a pound?
Yeah,
okay.
40-50s would be 40 to 50 shrimp in a pound.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's bait size.
Yeah, more or less bait
that's
size.
That's bait size. That's not eating size. Eating size is 15.
Well, 36, 40, you boil. Yeah. That's a good cocktail, you know.
You're going to fry and it's a little bigger.
You get bigger on down to 10, 15s, which about as big as they get.
And who owns the farms? Is it corporate or?
Most of them are pretty big, I hear.
Yeah.
Those big corporate deals that have the shrimp farms.
So just a person that didn't want to work a 9-to-5 couldn't start his own farm?
No way. Cost too much money to make one in the first place. You got to have quite a few acres. You got to have water pumps. All kinds. It's a lot of money to get started. King Ranch got one they started. And they, you know how that is. If you get, you know how to work the government, they got a big grant, you know, to start. And it didn't even work for them. And it was pretty big. I don't know how many acres, 10, 15 acres.
What's the quality? Is there a difference in quality?
Oh, yeah. Wild shrimp tastes a whole lot better.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
And that even that the farm shrimp, like farm salmon, like they'll start to get disease.
Yeah.
Or the color's off.
Mm-hmm. They're not as good tasty as a wild one either.
Because they'll feed them.
They feed them just like dog food, you know. It's a grain. It's some type of grain, you know, corn mixed. I don't know what meal, you know, different thing. Where in the wild, they eat a lot of wild fish, crabs, fish, stuff like that. Makes it taste different for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell me about the different kinds of shrimp. There's different seasons in the bay for different for different kinds of shrimp. I didn't know if you know that there are different kinds.
Yeah,
no, I didn't.
Yeah, there's hoppers, brownies, and whites down here mostly. You'll catch the hoppers from March to May, and then you'll start brownie shrimping from May to about August, and then from August to January or December, you'll catch whites.
And that means they're whiter. They're a whiter color, yeah, and the browns are brown. And the hoppers are kind of a pinkish, aren't they, kind of?
They're a little darker brown. They got a spot on them. That's real hardy. One of the hardiest shrimps, that hopper. Makes the best live bait. Stays alive good. The white shrimp's the weakest. It's the sorriest shrimp for live bait. Best eating shrimp.
Good eating shrimp.
I noticed your thing quit blinking. I don't know if that
No. We're good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We're good.
I didn't notice it lost its battery. Or
oh, no. Uh-uh.
Okay.
We're still.
I just seen it go away.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just went to sleep.
Oh, it's still running.
Yeah, I see it now.
So who would you sell? Was there different buyers for for the hopper, for the white?
No, same buyer buys the same.
Okay.
When you were just catching them, you know, dead for, you know, to sell and eat. Most of those shrimp all go to canneries in Louisiana. We don't think we lost all our shrimp plants back in the 70s in Texas. And then everything nearly from then, from the 70s up, went to Louisiana, dropped on a truck.
Shrimp plants?
Mm-hmm.
What exactly is that?
That's where they size them, peel them, freeze them, whatever they want to do with them. Sometimes you take that little bitty shrimp and they got an automatic machine that peels them.
Did you drop most of yours off at Con Brown?
Yeah, we sold some. No, we sold a Harbor Shrimp Company I like selling to for the last, till I quit. There was a lot of different.
Con Brown is over in Aransas Pass. It's a harbor.
Right. That's where Gulf King. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever heard of them.
Which was a big shrimp plant.
They had a big Gulf fleet. Gulf King did. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I know Gulf Oil. I think that's the only thing I know of.
Yeah.
Gulf
Oil.
No, it's not.
Not the same. Not the same thing. Okay. But they used to have big plants along the Con Brown Harbor over there.
Yeah, they did. They'd offload those shrimp, mostly freeze them. Tails is all they do there. They wouldn't cook them or peel them or nothing, but they'd freeze them in 5-pound boxes and they'd ship them all over the world.
So you mainly caught and then you sold to a guy on the wholesale level and then he did what he did with them.
Right.
So Calvin was this end, and then there was another guy, and then there was whatever he did with them. Mm-hmm. And Charlie, who he just got off the phone to, is Calvin Catches. Charlie has a fish market.
Okay.
And does he sell mostly to public, or does he sell some other wholesale?
He sells both. He's got a place where you can walk in there and buy one, and they'll fillet it for you. And, but then he sells a lot more to restaurants.
Yeah.
Miami restaurants, you know, is what he sells, all the drumbill restaurants. Mm-hmm. And people do come in and buy them, you know, just off the street, you know, come in and want fresh fish.
Where's he located at?
Morgan and Brownlee.
In Corpus.
Morgan. Charlie Allegri. I've sold him and his dad fish for 40 years.
Okay.
But now you also take some to Houston, don't you?
Yeah, that's a different type. Well, they don't sell to the public, but like L.A. Food, I sell a lot to. They're a subsidiary of Cisco. They mainly sell just to restaurants. I know you can't walk in there and just buy.
So Calvin sells to Catches. Well, Calvin is actually another middleman because Calvin doesn't fish anymore. So his son and does David used to
right now, him? That's all, yeah.
He's got two fishermen that fish for him. And then Calvin takes them and sells them to L.A.,
yeah,
and then LA probably sells them to Cisco, or processes them for Cisco or something.
They process some for Cisco, but they also have a lot of big restaurants in Houston mm-hmm. that they sell all their fish to.
And Cisco is a restaurant supplier.
Yeah, and Cisco's, that's right.
Seen those big trucks, that they're a big restaurant supplier.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So Calvin's not this end. his son and David are this end, and then there's Calvin.
That's how come they get so high. There's so many people that go through. The fishermen get the least. I don't make that much just for hauling them, but that next guy makes the money. Like Cisco and Charlie. He makes a lot of money.
Yeah.
He'll double his money.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Not quite like it was when you could catch them and take them to the fish market. No. They're straight on, right? Yeah.
No. But that's the way it is with a lot of things. There's too many people handle them. If you could come buy them straight from the fisherman, you'd buy them, get a lot cheaper.
Am I correct to remember hearing stories about y'all shrimping in the middle of Baffin Bay also? Did y'all ever shrimp there?
Yeah, we shrimp right here. They closed this off as a sanctuary from Sandy Hook to Nybar. Well, in about 1976, you couldn't shrimp in here no more. Not in this part of the bay. Now, from that far out, you could shrimp all the way to the lagoon.
But it used to be pretty good.
Oh, it was real good, yeah. You had shrimp hopping up all over. When I was a kid, you used to take just a regular drag seine right here, which is only, 20, 30 foot long? Seine it, now you can get you a half of, we call them Jack's boxes then, I think, or a cooler, you know, all the shrimp you wanted to eat.
And that's just a net that
you just pull it by
pull
hand.
Pull it through the water by hand, and it collects whatever it comes across.
There used to be lots of shrimp in this way. Lots of shrimp.
And crabs,
yeah. The crabs didn't like it when it wasn't salty, but when it's got the right salinity, it's one of the best crab bays in Texas. It gets the biggest blue crabs mm-hmm. in this one. I don't know what it is, but maybe because of the rocks, because this is the only bay in Texas that has rocks.
No kidding.
Or coral. It's really, we call them rocks, but they're actually old coral reefs.
Coral reefs.
Actually, it's still growing. It's still growing.
That's why if you're a smart fisherman in this bay, you have a map of what this bay looks like. Because there's rocks right below the water in lots of places.
Yeah, hit your motor and knock it off. You don't know what you're doing. Some places are only about that far under.
That's right.
You'd be going 70 miles an hour or 60 in some of these boats. You've got 300s on them.
I guess GPSs have kind of taken the place of maps, so it kind of tells you what's in
here. Yeah, they know where they're going most all of them.
Yeah.
With that GPS. But used to, they didn't.
Yeah, you used to have a map so you know where you were going. I was telling him the story about, and I don't know the complete story, but about you and Valentine out in the Gulf one time when you got one of your drags caught and the boat was hung up.
Uh-huh.
Valentine was telling me that story, part of it.
Oh, yeah. It was opening night of the Gulf of Mexico, I guess. Probably the one he was telling about.
Uh-huh.
We started out and hung up on a sunk shrimp boat. Broke our cable. Lost it all. Lost all the net doors and everything. Come back in and then went back out the next day and rehooked it and got it off, but we tore it all up getting it off. It was in about 100 foot of water, too.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Did you almost go under?
No, not the boat. No, just the net that was dragging on the bottom. Hung up.
And the way a shrimp boat works, I don't know if you've ever seen one.
No, I haven't.
Never seen one. Okay, it's like this, and then it has booms that it lowers, and that's where your nets and your doors are. Mm-hmm. And the doors are for weight?
Doors bring your net down to the bottom.
Down to the bottom, and then you just troll with the boat, and it scoops it up, and then I don't know how you just periodically pull it up.
Yeah, you drag by. Depends on what your try net says. You know, you're making samples of a little bitty shrimp net that's only about 10 foot. And pick it up every 20 minutes, look, see how much. If you got a lot of trash or a lot of shrimp, well, you want to pick up in an hour or two. If you're not marking much with that little net, well, you might drag 2 hours, 3 hours out in the Gulf. And then pick up the big nets, dump them out. And they got, I got a picture of one. This is in the bay, though.
But it's the same process.
Yeah. There's one of them with a net. Somewhere. Where's mama culling on it even? Yeah, there we go. That's one after you pick up, you dump it out all over.
And you just have all kinds of interesting stuff stuck in.
Here's Valentina. Yeah. Culling on one.
Uh-huh. And you throw back what you don't, you know, because you'll just collect everything.
Yeah, you get a lot of bycatch. Uh-huh. But nowadays they got what they call a bird. The turtle excluder. You got to drag a lot of extra stuff in your nets. It helps get rid of some of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Or you're just holding the shrimp.
And the minute you pull those up and start culling, the seagull is your best friend.
Your best friend?
Yeah, he hangs around because you fixing
that. I guess you might call it your best friend. We didn't really like
him. No, that's what I'm saying. I was being facetious. Okay. He isn't your best friend.
Yeah, they shit on you. Well, they just cover you up.
Yeah, they just will cover you up.
And plus, they'll steal all your shrimp and walk in the cabin. You can walk in the cabin like if Valentino wasn't back there or somebody wasn't on that deck. I had some pictures of them seagulls, but I guess I should have kept more out.
That's okay.
But anyway, you can walk in the cabin, say, get a cup of coffee or a Coke, and if you don't pay attention, you look back on the deck, you can't see the deck because it's all seagulls.
Oh, my goodness.
And they should have got run before you get back there and scare them off. And they like shrimp. Yeah. They'll pick out your shrimp, and then you'll have all your junk left. We didn't ever have too much fun with them. We hurt some of them pretty bad. And that's illegal, too.
That's okay.
But we run them off pretty hard sometimes with a stick.
But you just, in those nets, you just pick up whatever is swimming by when you're dragging. You know?
Yeah, you catch a lot of little mullet and croaker.
And some strange looking stuff.
Just all every kind of fish. Hell, I don't know what names the most of them are.
Uh-huh. What's the strangest thing you've ever caught?
Oh, wow. You catch some weird stuff out there in the Gulf. You don't have no idea what it is.
Yeah.
It looks funny.
Like those little puffer fish and dog fish.
And scorpion fish. Octopuses, we've caught octopus before.
Uh-huh. No kid.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Maybe they'll be in some little something down there, your net dumped over, old tire, or a 5 gallon can. They love to get in there.
Uh-huh.
And then when you pick up, you got a 5 gallon can, there'll be an octopus inside that can. Got it home. But you catch all, I don't know what, all kinds of stuff. Whatever's there, you catch it. It don't matter.
And then you have a box that you put them in because you have ice, right?
Yeah, after you cull them out, you got there's one. Yeah, well, here's a big ice chest right here. It's a homemade. It'll hold about 1,500 pounds.
How long can you stay out with 1,500 pounds?
Well, we just ice shrimp, not just we'd stay a day or two.
Yeah.
You know, with ice shrimp. 2 days, it's better to come in.
And what they were doing was catching what they call dead. Because at that point, it was to sell to eat or to sell as bait size.
And this is shrimp?
Some of them are.
Well, okay.
Some ain't. Some just...
He's culling right
there. Culling right there, yeah. He's picking out the shrimp.
And what kind of fish is this?
Them are drum. That's a...
Those are drum.
In the wintertime, when it was legal, you could go out and catch them with a shrimp trawl. What happened, they could get water, get so cold, the drum couldn't move. You could drag and catch them. I would look their word for that. I caught 10,000 pounds one day. And this boat, it was probably about, well, you see they're up about the engine hatch. It was probably up as high as his head from here to here with 10,000 pounds. Like, I couldn't even get to my motors until we unloaded them.
Which was also illegal.
Yeah.
But nobody was looking.
What she did, the law was when we was doing that, was you could keep any bycatch incidental to fishing. To shrimp it.
To shrimp it.
So we just accidentally caught them drunk. Then they made a law where here in this bay, you only had a 200-pound limit of shrimp. And you could only keep 20% of your bycatch. So if you had 200 pounds of shrimp on board, you could have 40 pounds of drum.
Oh.
So just, you know, it wasn't no way you'd go out and...
Accidentally catch 10,000 pounds.
Accidentally catch 10,000 pounds and bring them in. So, but we used to do that a lot.
Now, the drum is related to the redfish, aren't they? Uh-huh. Basically the same.
The red drum and the black drum.
Same fish?
Yeah, same fish.
It's just red's a prettier color, so people like it better.
And is this your boat, the Michael Troy?
That's the last one I had, the Michael Troy. I had two other ones. I keep, Melanie probably knows where they're at, but I can't find them. I had a boat called the Mitzi and a little scoop. My first little boat was probably about as big as that one, see.
This, in feet, how long?
This one's 50 foot.
That's a 50 foot.
By 16.
16.
And this one probably is about 28 by... Eight. My first boat was a little boat like that. And then I had one kind of in between that. And, you know, it was 40 foot by 10.
How much would a boat like that cost when you bought it?
Well, you mainly had to make them, have them made. But to get one made back then, probably about $50,000.
Well,
which is a lot of money back then.
Well, yeah. Well, what year was that?
That was in 1980. Well, I had the boat made in 78, that one. I finished it in 81. You know, it took a while to get the motors and get the A-frames, winches and all put on it.
You built it?
No, I did not build the hull.
Okay.
The hull. I bought the hull and the cabin.
Okay.
And then I built the A-frame, put the motors in it, put the wheels, struts, rudders, the deck. Everything else. I just bought the hull. The rest I made myself.
My goodness.
But there was... I'm not that good a boat builder. I could rig them out. I guess you'd say that's what it is.
And how long would they last?
Oh, they last for a long time. There's some of them still going that age.
Huh.
I would say, yeah, Ivan's boat's still going. I know a couple. I don't know how you take care of them, do you?
Sure.
Sure. Say from 80 to now, how old is that? That's 20, 30, 40 years, or less.
Rust is their main problem.
The what?
Rust is their main problem, is what gets them.
What's it made out of?
Well, that one is fiberglass, mainly with plywood, too.
Okay.
But it's mainly fiberglass that one was.
Fiberglass rusts?
No.
No, oh, but no. The stuff you put together.
Sure.
All your steel that you put on it.
Right, rust.
Will rust. That's why on mine, I almost tried to use almost everything aluminum and stainless. Of course, the motors, you know, and stuff like that was steel. That's an aluminum A-frame. That's aluminum on the sides. There's aluminum. Well, there's a winch on the bow. That picture was taken after I started snapper fishing. That's a winch I could anchor out in 500 foot of water with that winch, which is too deep to snapper anyway.
Yeah.
But I had that much rope. Sometimes you'd let out that much in a storm out there so you wouldn't pull your anchor. You know, less anchor you put, the more you're pulling straight up.
Right.
So you reel off a whole lot of rope. And then you're pulling a little more straight at that anchor. Because we went through some pretty good storms out there, you know, high northwesters.
Now, why would you fish in a storm? Sometimes you just get caught.
You get caught in it.
You get caught.
Yeah, especially high north. When it's down south, you'd have to buck the wind coming in. So, yeah, high north, you'd have to travel north. You'd have to go against some seas. Now, that boat's 50 foot, but at 10 miles an hour, one of them seas going straight at it, you jump plumb out in the air.
No kid.
I mean, just like, I've got some pictures of Roy's boat. His was 50 when we was coming in once, but I don't know where they're at. It was completely out of, in the air. And he was going slow because you don't want to do that because it pounds it real bad. You can break it, as a matter of fact. Those boats wasn't made to jump out of the water.
Fiberglass will break.
Have you ever been in a small boat in the waves?
Yeah.
Hard it is. Mm-hmm. And you imagine how the waves get bigger. But we generally throw the anchor then and just sit there. I've found it on the anchor before. That's how big some of the waves was. But a high, high northwest. And we got in a storm. It blew 90 miles an hour straight off here. Uh-huh. And that's the first time I ever took Troy with me. Snapper fishing. He had fun. He thought that was fun. He could jump, standing on deck, and then he'd stick on the cabin top as we was going down, kind of like,
Troy was his oldest son.
Yeah. But I was worried he was going to sink or flip. Yeah. 20-foot seas, 25-foot seas. And that boat, he'd go, whoa, and then he'd come down, and he'd jump up, and that course.
Now, when you say,
I never even thought about trying it myself.
When you say
and it'd
seas,
stick to the top of the cabin.
Is that the height of the wave? Is that what you're talking about when you talk about 25-foot seas?
Yeah, 25-foot, the height of that wave.
Yeah, the height of the wave.
According to our fathom meter, it was some of them 25-foot, 15 to 25-foot. No one was worried. Coast Guard, there was 3 or 4 boats sunk that night out there. We didn't, luckily.
Now, there's a stereotype of fishermen that they're superstitious. Is
that
true?
Some of them are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some of them are superstitious. I never was. Myself. Never. Can't think of nothing superstitious about it.
Did you ever see anything strange, like strange lights or, anything like that?
One time, and we was off what we call 2410 between Washington Beach and Tampico, about 40 miles out. We seen a light come up out of the water. Seemed like it come out of the water. And then it got big and it got closer. Me and Roy, that old guy I was talking about, that went. My radar wasn't working that day. But I said, Roy, can you see that damn thing on your radar? He said, yeah. He said, what is that? I said, yeah, Fondo. He said, it come out of the water. He said, yeah, I seen it when it come up too. And then it got closer and closer. And it was down up. Like one of them UFOs to me. And he says, must be. And I said, well, I guess it'll fly off in a minute. And when it did, finally left, it went back down in the water. I said, did you lose it on radar? He said, yeah. As soon as we couldn't see it, he said it come off the blimp too on the radar. But it was something that come out of the damn water and then went back in the water. And could go up pretty high too. It was going up, I don't know how, 200, 300 foot, 500. I don't know how high that was. Couldn't really judge how big it was. It looked pretty big. But it got maybe within 8, according to Roy, about 9 miles from us on the radar. You could blimp it in. But that's the weirdest thing I ever seen. I guess we seen a damn UFO.
Ah, that's kind of neat.
But it did come out of the water, and it went back in the water. It didn't just fly off. Because we seen it go this way with the lights, and it went out of sight. And it went off radar at the same time. So if it went on the water and stayed on top, the radar would have picked it up. But it went off radar at the same time. Some damn UFO.
I think it was. I think you're
we
right.
Never saw anything like that again or before, but one time. That's the only thing I ever thought was weird out there was that. Some of them little guys that go fishing in out of Mexico and in ponga boats, they'd be out there.
Now tell me what a ponga boat is.
It's a little boat about 25 foot long. They'd be 40 miles offshore in it. One outboard,
It rides better in the waves than the
crane. Yeah, but still not for the Gulf. But those guys did. They're poor. Mexican trying to just catch a fish.
It's a long kind of skinny boat.
Uh-huh.
So they're taking a lot of risks.
A lot of risks out there in that big boat. We had them on the top to us at night, but whether some of those were bandits, I don't know. None of them ever tried to kill us, I can put it that way, or take our boat from us. We lost one guy one time. We think that's what happened to him. But what all means, of them that was...
What do you mean you lost one guy one time?
Well, he went to Mexico with us and just never come back. The boat.
On your boat?
No.
Oh, okay.
On another boat. He went down there, and we've always heard that them guys jump on your boat, cut your throat, and then steal your boat, bring it into British Honduras, or, you know, and then sell it. You know. But we don't never know, and still to this day, don't know what happened to that guy. Or his boat, or if it sunk, or if they got him. We talked to him. Well, the second day we talked to him, he was about 20 miles ahead of us. And then after that, we just never heard or never seen from him, never come back to the dock, never nothing. Mm-hmm. And they say that's happened before, but that's the only one I knew of. But we never could sleep at night with one tied to us, so we wouldn't let them tie to us at night. Most of them just wanted a Coke or something to drink or a can of food. They was hungry.
Yeah.
You know, but still, we wouldn't let them tie up to us.
Okay, so now tell me, when y'all would go out, shrimping in the Gulf. Tell me about what you ate.
Oh, well, we eat a lot of what we caught, you know. We boiled shrimp, fried fish, fried shrimp. But just eat a lot of sandwiches.
That's what I was after right there. Valentine said I went along.
Bologna sandwiches.
Never wanting to ever see a bologna sandwich.
But, yeah, it's easy and quick. Just throw some bread and mayonnaise and bologna. I always liked it. Valentino, he didn't like the bologna. He'd rather eat a bowl of beans.
Yeah. Well, y'all cooked a pot of beans.
Oh, yeah,
too,
we cooked beans out there. We cook them with a crock pot most of the time. Uh-huh. So we can get the cabin so hot, you know. Plus, you can lock that crock pot down, strap it down. If you didn't, it'd fall off in the sea. It was a good old days, I guess.
So tell me about some of the old guys around here. Is that what sparked your interest in fishing when you were a little kid, or was it the fact that you just lived by the water?
Well, I guess the fact you lived by the water and made good money. You made a lot of, you know, good money for them days.
Yeah.
It was really good, you know. I did a couple different times, roughneck, you know, off and on.
What's a roughneck? Oh,
worked on drilling rigs.
Okay.
I can call them roughnecks. But we just made good money. That's the main reason I think I did it.
That, and you could be your own boss.
Yeah, that being your own boss, didn't have to.
Nobody could tell you what to do. And no. If you wanted to outlaw, you could.
Yeah, we did that. Plenty of outlaws. Nothing.
So you're just kind of like a modern day pirate.
Right? I don't know. Maybe so.
I think you are.
Yeah, we did. I know the game wardens, they was all trying to catch me all the time. We'd get on at it for 20 years, you know, because I knew every game warden by name.
Did you ever get caught?
Yeah, I got caught a couple times.
Yeah.
I got caught. Not 100% caught, what I'd say, but, I mean, there was no way. He even took them to court, you know, and you'd lose every time. We took a bunch of them to court, you know. My lawyer, he got to where he hate being my lawyer, except for one time they only fined us $100, and that sure made the judge mad. I let the jury decide the fine, and they only fined us $100, so my lawyer said, well, at least we won. What do you call that, a moral victory? It only cost $100 for the fine. They wanted to fine me like thousands, you know, the judge did, but they did. There was one judge one time that the game wardens told her, she was a lady, that if they give me a ticket, you fine him maximum amount. It didn't matter what it was either. And the maximum amount of fine that time was in the 70s was $500. But all generally they find you at 3250. So they want to get, if I had a hole in my life jacket, that was 532.50. And, or if a light bulb went out on a boat, that was 532.50. But that lady that was a judge, she didn't want to go to court for nothing. She didn't, because she never, it was a JP court for the small misdemeanor thing. So whenever I'd say, well, I'm going to take it to trial. Oh, she'd say 3250. And one of the gay words to find out that's all she found. They'd be mad. I said, that's it. 3250. Okay, I'll pay that. And the gay word said, here she's supposed to find you maximum amount. Yeah, but she don't want to go to trial. She don't want to hold a JP trial. Yeah, right. She don't want to. Yeah. And finally, they put it into the next time. I think we went into county court, you know. And then that judge, now he was different. When it was over, when they started putting restitution on the drum, then he'd go over so much money, he'd go into county court. That's when we really...
And now it's serious. Now they can, like, take your boat.
Oh, yeah, they take your boat.
License.
If you was caught with 1,000 pounds of drum, I bet that'd be $50,000 worth of restitution.
Right? Oh, my goodness.
Which would be a lot. Normally, how much does Jason... Like, has he already picked up, or is he picking up tomorrow? So he'll bring you fish tomorrow?
Yeah, he'll bring fish tomorrow.
And he's fishing out of the bay?
Right.
Okay, and Jason is a very aggressive fisherman. I mean, he works at it really. Some of them are lazy. They go put their lines out and they don't go back for 2 or 3 days. But Jason is an aggressive, he wants to make a living. So he's an aggressive, good fisherman, kind of like his dad was. I guess he learned from him. So how much is Jason catching out of the bay right now?
Well, this time of year it's slow. He's getting 300, 400, 500 pounds.
During the good time, how much?
Oh, good time, it's 1,000, 1,500 a day.
My goodness. Mm-hmm. And that's because you think of the pollution from the farms or overfishing? Or
well, when you fish this time of the year with this wood, you generally never catch a whole lot. This is, but like in the winter when he's really got to work and you bait with shrimp and crab, you know, he'll catch 1,500 pounds a day. But you got to stay out there and bait him all day long, you know. Sometimes he stays at night. But these, you just put that piece of wood on it and you leave your trot line, you come back the next day or let it set 2 days. And then you just take what fish. You might have to put 20 new pieces of wood on, that's all, you know, out of 2,000 hooks. You can fish 20 lines legally right now, which is approximately 2,000 hooks. And
lazy fishermen just put them out there and leave them for a day or so and then go get what they caught.
Yeah, and if you do, you know, if your lines aren't catching no fish where they're at, you need to pick them up and move them. And that's what he does a lot, pick it up, move them around, try another spot.
Jason isn't, he wants to make a living doing it.
Yeah. This is Jason?
No, this is his twin brother.
Okay. He couldn't hardly tell apart at that time.
That's what Jason looks like. Yeah. That's his twin brother. So then you buy him and pay him so much a pound.
Right.
And then you take it and sell it to somebody else for so much a pound. Mm-hmm. And then it just goes from that point on.
See, like, well, this is a good time of the year for the price. So that's the way it is with everything. The more you got, the less they want to pay for it. If you hadn't got it and the demand's good, they'll pay more. So we're paying about $1. I'm paying $1.50 to the fisherman. And I'm getting $1.85. I make 35 cents just
right, hauling them over there. And they carry them in ice bound, what they call lugs.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you've ever seen them.
Yeah,
we can look at ones. Yeah. You probably got one out there.
Oh, there's a bunch of them.
It's a big rubber made looking thing. And
they're insulated.
They're insulated, and he'll have ice in it, and then he'll have fish.
And you put fish and ice, and layer it.
Mm-hmm.
They'll hold good in it for 5 days. They hold about 1,300 pounds of box. And this year, now, this time of year, if you get 2 boxes a week, you do it pretty good. Yeah.
Did they have a good year this year during Lent?
Yeah, he did good.
It's really amazing. The fish runs are better during Lent. when most of the Catholic people are eating fish.
Yeah, that's because the drum are spawning. Uh-huh. The drum come in these creeks and lay their eggs.
Yeah.
And then that's when they catch them. That's something to hear if you had never heard it, is up a creek when the drum are spawning. Mm-hmm. They'll sound like a big diesel motor running it. Because if you're real close to an individual drum and you hear them swimming around, you just hear them going boom, 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 boom. But when you got 2 million of them doing that, it just sounds like a diesel motor. Because there's no time between each one. But there'll be, I'm sure there's hundreds of thousands or millions of drums booming all at one time in a small area. And it sounds like a roar or a giant diesel motor at a distance. I don't know what they sound like. But you'll hear them going by you. You know, and the male booms more than the female. Female lays them eggs, and they'll sit there and boom, and then they make a different boom than a male, and he comes over and puts semen on it, you know.
Fertilizes
the eggs. That's what they're doing. They're communicating with each other after they lay their eggs, you know. But that's weird to hear. I know the first time I went in that, it was that noise.
Now, what size drum do you have to catch to be able to sell?
Well, he's got to be over 14 and under 30 inches.
Is that the same as a sports fisherman?
Uh-huh. Same size. Same size as a sports fisherman. All right. Well, that's only, well, flounder, I think, are 12 inches or bigger. They don't have a top end length. Sheephead, I don't think they got a size.
Yeah, I don't have much of a limit either. I think it's pretty big.
Yeah. We don't have a limit on it. Commercial.
Sheephead is good eating, too.
Oh, I just see it as a drum. To me, it's closer to a red snapper.
Right, yeah.
They're just harder to clean, and you got to know how to clean them.
Right, but the meat on it is really good.
You could put it out, and most people wouldn't know if they was eating red snapper or
sheephead. I like sheephead.
Very good.
And now y'all eat... Tell me about all the parts of the fish that you
eat. Oh, yeah. I like to float. On a male drum, it's actually their testicles. And in the winter, when they're spawning, that they get big. And you take cut that just right, and you fry it and eat it. And the eggs in the females are really good. And the livers are good.
Would that be considered caviar? Is that what caviar is?
Well, it's a different type of egg, those salmon I think it's just salmon eggs that they make.
Oh, caviar.
And one fish in Russia is called.
Sturgeon.
I don't remember, but that's a high dollar.
A sturgeon.
A sturgeon, yeah. They lay their little bitty eggs.
But the drum eggs are bigger.
Yeah, but it's a sack. But when you take one, it's about that big around, say that long, and you ate that egg, you probably ate 3,000 drum, because there'll be 3,000 little tiny eggs inside that sack. And they're good. I really like
it. It has a texture sort of like cheese.
Yeah, on the egg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you cook it.
But I like to float. I like the livers. You got to know how to fix them, too. You got to take the gall off of them. The drum liver is really good.
How do you cook them?
Fry. I'm just saying, it's like you fry the fish meat. You know, filet, just roll it cornmeal, little salt, pepper, fry it.
And collars? Do you eat the collars?
Collars are good. It's a different type of flavor, too.
It's got to be. It's sort of like a snapper
fish. I don't know. It's just altogether different flavor than the rest of the fish, that collar.
But they didn't waste any part of it.
No. I don't. I eat the guts, and Noni eats the fish. That's what she said. You can have your guts. I'll eat my fish.
I'm kind of with Noni on that. I tried it.
But if I clean one, if it's got an egg, I'll save it. Floats. At that time of the year, I always save them. And the livers. You got to eat the liver. They really got to be a fresh fish. That day's fish, really, to eat that liver. It don't taste as good after it stays. That gall gets against it. Some kind of green stuff in a little bag.
Bile.
Boy, it is bitter if you don't get that
bile. That's bile.
Bile, yeah, I guess. Because we've accidentally not took it off of one time, and I bit into it. Oh, my God. That was horrible. Whatever that is, it's terrible. I know a friend of mine, He cooked up a bunch of livers, left them all on purpose to give to people. Jesus Christ, he made a bunch of people mad. And he knew which one to eat.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was picking them out and eating them. And then the other one would put one of them livers in his mouth and bite down that guy. It was a bunch of them drunk there. There you go. But I thought it was funnier than hell.
Now, Karen said you had a write-up in Reader's Digest.
Uh-huh. Yeah, this one here, I think, somewhere. Yeah, Mama said it was this one.
Now, if you want to borrow that book, we can get it.
You can borrow it if you want to. Mom wants it back.
No big deal. We can get it back to you.
Well, I got an app where I can scan things, mm-hmm. and so, you know, but
whatever you want to do.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it'd be nice, yeah, if we could, if I take some of these and scan them and then get them back
yeah.
to you.
Yeah, you can take them as long okay. as we get them back.
Oh, right. Sure. No, yeah, we'll
get them back.
Well,
and this mom's, I don't think she'd care if you took it as long as she gets
it. Oh, she was excited that you were going to talk to her. Yeah,
I said some of the oldest pictures of the King's Inn. And I think, yeah, see, there's some of them old fishing boats that they used to go out and stay on them. That was about 30, 40 foot long, you know, and,
what year do you think this is? They did have the year, but it looks like somebody scratched it out.
That had to be 50s, 40s or 50s. Had to be in the 40s or 50s. Probably 40s. I'd say 40s, because yeah, Daddy was come back from Korea and was still, could have been late 30s too.
Your daddy came back from Korea, that would have been the 50s.
Well, it may have been. Let's see, I'm 52. No, it was late 40s when he came back.
Those look like 40-style boats because they look like they're all wood.
Oh, they are. They're all planked.
Mm-hmm.
Old planked.
And it looks like 30s and 40s-style boats.
I'd say those are 40s if I had to guess right.
A long pier for boats to tie up at Loyola Beach, built by Orlando Underbrink.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't have built the piers till probably the 40s.
Something like that.
Yeah. So this has to be 40s, 50s era.
Okay.
Because he wouldn't have built that pier till then. They didn't move. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because this would have been kind of out there.
This must have been how it looked when Grandpa first opened the beach up. That boulevard or something.
This would have been
there. Mom would be the one he'd talk to about this.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, she can.
Well, that's Daddy when he worked at the King's Inn, and the lady that owned it, I swear.
That's his dad right there.
Yeah.
It's Robert Brown. This would have been out in front of
King's. And then Mom, she worked there.
Uh-huh.
And that's what her, she made salads there for years and years. What that says about it.
See, this would have been in front of King's Inn.
Yeah, it was in front of the King's Inn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That water isn't deep enough to put those boats in there now in front of King's Inn. Unless it was...
Well, the bank was a lot further out.
Yeah.
That the hurricane's knocked out.
Yeah. It's eroded a lot of the... Yeah.
It's eroded plumb up under the King's
Inn.
Yeah,
now, yeah, yeah. That part that your dad built...
When I was a little kid, just this right here, I know it was 40, 50 feet further. We used to run up and down in long... white clay banks. It was all through here. Mm-hmm. But hurricane, I don't know how many, 3 or 4 or 5 since then's come in. Every time they take 10, 12 feet.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people got seawalls now, but back then nobody had seawalls.
No.
So eventually will the house be eaten up?
Mm-hmm.
Eventually will the house be taken?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, anything you want to borrow
yeah.
and see if you have other questions about it.
Okay.
If you want to talk to his mom, I can set that up too.
Okay.
She has more of a history of her...
She's the one that really knows about...
Well, now you know about the fishing farm,
yeah, but she knows more about
how to beach. She knows about the whole area down okay. here. She'd be the one to answer those
she
kind of
questions.
She worked
in the little stores. And
yeah.
Grandpa built that store.
Yeah.
I guess in the 40s.
Yeah.
Too, when uh-huh. she was a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
worked in it.
So if you want to take it and see if you have any other questions or anything.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. I think that's what we'll do. I think we'll go ahead and conclude with the...
That's good.
And be okay if he wanted to come back and he had some other questions?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay,
that's
cool.
Might have to check with me.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah. No, that wouldn't be a problem. We